Καλημέρα.
Χρόνια πολλά.
Χρόνια μας πολλά. Manny, are you there?
I'm right here.
Okay, okay. So let's start. I think Walmart was the big news today, and Home Depot. They have some great returns, and I think the market has maybe settled down, maybe not.
Yeah, so actually Walmart's been a great pick. It's a company that we've liked for quite some time, and I think that it's going to continue to do well over the next year to 2 years. They've done a great job of building a defensive moat around their core business. They're becoming more competitive with Amazon in some capacity, and they have a very loyal customer base. Home Depot was a bit of a surprise, just given how robust their numbers were. The question with Home Depot, and it looks like it seems to be the case based off of their earnings call, is that the market of home restoration and improvement is still very strong, following the last year. The narrative that was being spilled on Wall Street was that after the first round of stimulus checks and people buying, freezer chests to hoard meat products and everything else during the pandemic, we thought some of that might start to dissipate. And consumers would transition their consumer spending back to more core durable goods and to experience-oriented economies and a shift back to service. But it seems like the home restoration market will stay with us for quite a bit, and it's not surprising given, how expensive some of these cost of items have become. Interestingly enough, you had your home starts data this morning, which was a lackluster supply. And it looks like you might actually have a slowdown in home building, which could be at the worst possible time given our housing market. But that will also rely on, are these developers building on spec? If they're building on spec, they're not going to build right now. They're not going to build with lumber at 35% price increases and nails at 40% price increases. So it's interesting, but it seems that the home restoration model will continue for at least the next year or so. That's really good news for anyone that's invested in Home Depot, or Lowe's for that matter.
Well, yeah, Kostas is an early investor in Home Depot.
Kostas didn't have his headphones on and had no idea what you just said. So
can you repeat, please?
I said that you were an early investor in Home Depot.
Εσύ δηλαδή θέλεις να σου πω κάτι στον αέρα και δεν πρέπει. Του έχω πει την ιστορία που I refuse to put $10,000 1988. Θα είχα τώρα 5 εκατομμύρια και το θυμάται ο δικός σου εδώ και μου τη βγαίνει με κόκκινο. Δεν πειράζει, αγόρι μου.
Next time Manny speaks, you should say.
You better believe it. No question about that. From now on, Manny will be the one that I'm going to listen to.
Manny, since you were talking about that and, the housing shortage potential with, people not building houses when the lumber's up because they were expecting it to go down, what about the rental market? Does that kind of adversely mean that the rental market will stay hot?
I think the rental market's going to pick up from here.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing happening is that the housing market isn't going to slow down. It's going to become even more challenging for initial home buyers. And I think that this is going to lead to an environment of stagflation. So what's going to occur is you're going to have the housing market slightly cool down, but you're also going to have rentals jump drastically just due to these people. I can't tell you how many calls I field where someone says, I have, XYZ in the bank, we're trying to buy a house, we still think we need 1 to 2 years based off of the housing market, but we're not getting any money in the bank.
Right.
So there's a significant amount of the people that are trying to buy a home that just can't afford to do so at these present rates. So they're going to go back to renting for the next 1, 2, 3 years, whenever this decides to cool down, and then enter into that first-time home buying experience. So rents will go up, which is going to go into the CPI and PPI, and that's going to give us higher inflationary reads as we go into the summer months.
Yeah, and I think we're moving away from the model of the home buyer. I mean, like a lot of people are, choosing to rent and stay in rents. Like you have younger people who can't really afford to get into the market, period. So I think you have like a shifting of the model and the expectation in society too.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, given where home prices are right now, and you incorporate potential tax increases, it could become very unaffordable. Renting could become way more affordable compared to home buying over the next 1 to 2 years.
You know, I can't tell you, Manny, how many people I know your age, you know, as a result of, you know, just friends of my own kids that, you know, they're in their early 30s, late 20s, you know, either married or, you know, with their significant others, collectively are making, you know, well over $200,000 a year, have absolutely no problem spending $3,500 a month for a beautiful apartment, and, you know, for the time, and still saving. So, you know,
yep,
there is still that element, and particularly here in Boston,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of that out there. You're right, you know,
It's a different expectation.
It's a different expectation. They're saving, they're loving, you know, their life. They're not, yeah, you know, I'm looking for a $2,000 apartment. I don't want the amenities. They want it. They want everything, and they're paying for it, and they're not complaining about it either.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of that YOLO generation kind of stuff.
YOLO?
You
know?
Yeah, you only live once.
Yeah, the YOLO.
I love that. It's
actually a passé because, you know, I'm like, you know, when the students say it to you and you're like 50 some years old professor, it's like,
I don't ever recall that one.
Yeah,
before.
So
yeah, that is actually
something to be said about that.
Las Olas in Florida, that is a very well known restaurant, YOLO.
Yeah,
everybody goes there. All the leftades pane aquí, asume que ta cubana.
Manny, what I wanted to kind of get you to explain to myself and our listening audience. We were talking about it a little bit earlier. I'm not sure if we talked about it last week, but the transfer of money, the $5 million that was transferred as a result of the hacking, the pipeline hacking, and how it was exchanged through cryptocurrency. And I, for the life of me, cannot understand how you can make a transaction without, you know, knowing who gave it or who received it or where it is. So I'm kind of stuck on that, on the crypto side. Is there an explanation for that?
Not yet. Not one that I've really uncovered, but this is going to continue to put questions on that crypto market space. And, you know, what is the final purpose of this and what could actually be done? I mean, we know it's used heavily in black markets and illegal trade. So it's the reason why you had that, the statement of the IRS a few weeks ago that caused a collapse in Bitcoin prices a few weeks ago based off of them going in towards an investigation. So I think this is something that's going to get played out, and I think it's going to be something similar to Archaeos, where you don't learn the real story for a couple of weeks. This still needs to be played out, and there's going to be ramifications from it. I mean, we're talking about now, I think Biden came out this morning and said he wants to spend $80 billion on cybersecurity, or I think it might have been yesterday. But there's obviously going to be major ramifications from this incident.
Yeah, and I think the cyber issue is a bigger issue than anything else. I mean, you know, just the ability to do something like that and then pay ransom to get it going, I think it's really a bad, bad precedent. And I know it's not the first time that it's been done, but I think it really raises all kinds of different kind of issues as far as security is concerned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, we touched on this last week. It's the new battleground. I mean, this is where wars will be played out for the next decade. I mean, we're really not going to have hot wars any longer, at least knock on wood, hopefully not. I mean, the next time we might have a hot war could potentially be in Europe. You know, look 10, 15 years down the road and we might have something there. But right now, our fear isn't of a hot war. Our fear is war taking place in financial markets and in cybersecurity.
Yeah, and if you can slow down the U.S. economy and you can bring that kind of like a cost, and as we saw like with the huge lines last 2 weeks ago, I don't think you need anything else. I mean, this was just like an indication of like, you know, what's to come.
Yeah. If you want to hurt the U.S., you go after its economy and you go after its fiscal power. There's no one that can stand up to the military might or have a fear of the U.S. being invaded. So, I mean, yeah, if you're looking to attack the U.S. and its population, that's your means.
Or raise gas prices. I mean, if you go like over that $4 a gallon, I mean, you're like, you know, you can touch anything that Americans have. If you touch their right or their ability to like travel,
you're cutting them off right at the knees.
I think that's a politicized movement. I think that the increase in what we're seeing in fossil fuels could have been completely controlled by this administration and the previous administration, and I think this administration is letting what the previous administration continue on with the idea that this is going to be his means to push his Green Deal forward. If he can then go to his constituents, if he can go to Congress, if he can go to the American people and say, how can we survive off oil when we have these types of price fluctuations? We really need to push forward on going on to green energy and removing this difficulty from our economy and from our businesses being able to plan for cost increases. So I think this is actually a politicized move to be able to push forward any Green Deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the case for, you know, well over a decade. You know, somebody like Thomas Friedman has argued for like a dollar tax per gallon, just in order for it to, you know, to condition the consumer to accept that kind of a thing. I mean, Americans pay like one third of what Europeans pay at the gas pump. You couldn't possibly have that kind of a policy in the United States without some kind of a revolt on the inside. So I think that is very much at play.
Yep. Yeah.
Since we're talking about the fuels, let's talk a little bit about that whole industry now, because, you know, people are going to be driving, people are going to be flying, people are going to be, the cruise lines are going to be back in action. What's that do to the holder of somebody who's involved in petroleum, Manny? How do you see that?
I think it's a great place to be for the next 5 years, and after that, it's a real big question mark. I mean, we're invested in those fields, we're invested in MLPs. Just because we think that there's going to be a huge amount of need for that product over the short term. But, I mean, you had the EIA come out this morning and say that we can't drill any more gas rigs, that we can't open up any more oil fields, that there cannot be another coal power plant, or we're never going to get to our net zero carbon emissions target. They're talking about 60% of the vehicles on the road being electric by 2030, and that essentially limiting the use of fossil fuels by the time we get to 2050, and then at that point, the price of oil should be sub $27 a barrel for the rest of its use. That is what they're projecting going forward.
So are they they're trying to have all vehicles be electric by 2050, everything, no fuels
they
at all?
They want 60% of the vehicles on the road by 2030 to be electric vehicles.
60%.
By 2030.
That's around the corner.
That's right around the corner.
I know.
I mean, you know.
I mean, it's an aggressive target. I don't know how you push it.
How do you even? I mean, is that just a number that they want? I mean, what is that number? That's the wishing number? Is that? I mean, how do you?
That's the number of what they want. But this is all based off of scientific models that if you want to get to a net zero carbon world by 2050, these are the initiatives that you need to push forward to get to that target. Their goal is to get to net zero emissions by the year 2050.
Very interesting. I mean, I can't look into that crystal ball and
no, of course, and that's why it's too hard to look. Wall Street is a game of trying to project, and as we know, most analysts out there can barely ever get an earnings projection correct. So being able to project what our use of fossil fuels in the next 10 to 20 years is going to be pretty difficult to do, which is why I'm very comfortable being in that space for the next 5 years.
Sure.
Because where there's no way it's going to be that radical of a transition. But after that period of time, you're going to have new analysis and a new understanding of the regiment that we're moving into.
Yeah, well, plus, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, plus, you don't understand like what the market share, the global market share will be. I mean, that's an American projection.
Right.
That's not going to be the projection everywhere else in the world. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, having this huge blind spot thinking that you are the market, where the market is a global market.
The biggest argument there is yeah, you could get the U.S. and you can get some of the rest of the world to follow suit, but who's going to control China, the largest emitter of carbon into the world?
Or Africa.
Who's going to regulate them and make sure that they're being held accountable? So, yeah, it's a massive question, and that's why some people are speculating that maybe the idea isn't to go to a net zero world. Maybe the idea is we should continue the way that we're doing and then find new ways to be able to remove carbon from the atmosphere.
What's wrong with the hybrid model? It's been working for everything else lately, you know? I mean, think about
it. It's a mitigation and adaptation. Like, so the people that talk about climate change and, you know, they have those concerns, it's a matter of, like, mitigation and adaptation. And I think the issue here is, like, how unequal, you know, the space is across the planet when you are thinking that you're going to do this and then eliminate fossil fuels altogether from the equation.
Not only that, but just this conversation, you know, I'm envisioning myself driving home, of which I'm going to pass, you know, 30, you know, fuel trucks of some size or shape. And, you know, all of those have, you know, ports of entry and ports of exit and people working and the whole infrastructure that goes around just that particular guy driving, you know, fuel. And it's going to be transferred to Quincy. From Quincy, it's going to the gas station. I'm going to go there. The gas station attendant, the custodian, you name it. Everybody's involved. Everybody's involved. Take that and couple the fact that you're hearing a lot of these, you know, a lot of technology going into driverless. So the auto, you know, to drive these vehicles. Now, if these vehicles aren't going to be there and they're trying to eliminate them, it's, you know, is it too much?
Well, it's a different labor market altogether. I mean, that's an inevitability, regardless of what happens with the fossil fuels. My point is that you can't just look at the marketplace being the American marketplace. It has to be a global marketplace.
Agreed. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Yeah. No, it's a very narcissistic view that one market would be able to adapt or change the entire world's methodology of fossil fuel use.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens, but those are the targets that were set out from the Paris Accord, where you have had every single country pretty much sign, and then the U.S. dropped out of. So, again, that remains their target for 2050. Who knows if they get there?
Yeah.
I think they will learn as time progresses, and we'll take it over a year-to-year interval. And, you know, like I said, for the next 5 years, you can feel very comfortable invested in, you know, your ExxonMobil's, your Chevron's, ConocoPhillips, et cetera. But, you know, after that time period, it does, you know, bring up an opportunity for rethought, and that will be, you know, determined by the environment.
Yeah. Another question I had, Manny, with all the vaccines out there, and I even heard today on my way in on WBZ that they're sending like 80 million vaccines out of the
20 million
out of the country, big number. So all these,
it's not really that big of a number.
Yeah, globally, when you think about it, yeah.
Globally, it's one day of vaccines.
Well, think about that, yeah. So with that being asked, you know, where does that put the Pfizers and the J&Js and the Modernas of the world these days?
Well, look, I still think they're a great buy, but they're just not the focus of the market. I mean, there was a really, really good tweet that went out a few weeks ago that compared the stock price of Pfizer to the stock price of Tesla. One company hasn't actually really recorded an earnings in 17 years from its actual core business. The other company was able to do something science didn't predict, come to the market with a rapidly instrumental vaccine in a record amount of time, yet the stock of Pfizer has gone nowhere essentially in over a two-year period, and Tesla in just the year of 2020 was up 700%.
Yeah.
So it's a very fractured market, and it's really whatever investors are looking at, what their appetite is. For me, I'd rather own Pfizer than own Tesla.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Well, absolutely. I mean, with the environment that we're in right now and the fact that, you know, you're going to have to have booster shots and you're going to have to, like, it's not like you're out, one out kind of a thing, so.
Yeah, and then don't forget, you're going to have, you know, new drugs,
yeah,
and new advancements come out of these fields following mRNA and all
absolutely
these new procedures that have been put in place for the first time. The medical field's rapidly going to change, and what we know to be true is we're not going to stop spending on healthcare, so. I think those are companies that I can feel very comfortable, you know, owning and go to bed at night, knowing that they're doing something great for the world and that they're actually producing products that have the potential for earnings.
You know what I'm curious? I'm curious to see how next winter is going to be health-wise, you know, as a result of people, the world, you know, at least in the United States of America, that we can monitor what percentage of people have been vaccinated, that you can pretty much come up with and, you know, compare that to, you know, previous years and see how health has been, you know, on the regular side, even on the just the flu side. I'm very curious.
Well, look at the flu rates this year. They were minimal.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's something to be said about making sure that we wash our hands and we wear masks.
No doubt.
And I think that maybe a potential, even after the mask mandates are gone, you can have a significant portion of the population, especially in these winter months, that say, I'd rather wear a mask. I don't want to deal with a cold. I mean, I honestly didn't even have a cold all of this entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based off of just the protection of PPE.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something to be said about that, and we'll see how it goes. But boy, I mean, has the last 10 days really flipped everything upside down? I mean, we went from virus, 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 fear, 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 to all of a sudden everything is wide open.
Wide open.
We're opening up everything completely. I'll tell you firsthand, I just was in Newport this past weekend for a wedding, and it was like the entire city never even heard of COVID. There was no one wearing a mask. People were gathering in restaurants. Bars were completely open. People were walking around, and it seemed like life was completely normal for the first time in over a year.
But I mean,
so it seems like we've completely drastically changed in just a 10-day period. So what are the ramifications of next winter? I don't know. It seems like we've displaced a lot of the fear that surrounded this economy and this country for the last, you know, call it 14 months.
But, you know, it's all about confidence, right? Like, yeah. You know, if you build the confidence, then it's just like, well, you know, things move around.
You know, I got to tell you, even this program today, I've, you know, personally, on a personal basis, I've been up since 7 o'clock. I'm in a good mood. I'm in a good mood as a result of everything that I've seen in the last. Opening up, doing this, you know, going golfing, you know, going to a fest. That's the power of my positive thinking. And I'm sure, same with you, Manny. I can hear you. You're all gassed up today. You know, that's why it's got to play into the equation.
Yeah, 100%. Teddy, just tell us the truth. You're happy that you're getting a tan again.
I don't think he even lost it. I don't know what's going on, but I haven't seen him lose the tan.
That's all right. That's all right. I've invested in some fluorescent lights at home.
Under
you
the
know
mask.
I mean? I sleep with a fluorescent light on my face. Stamati is still there with us. How's it going, Stamati?
Yes, I'm right here. I'm just reading the comments of Yellen about higher taxes.
What she got to say? Mm.
We'll actually learn more. We're supposed to get the Republicans' proposal for an infrastructure bill today, and they're supposedly going to come up from the $560 billion number that they had, but they are pushing for no tax increases, and I think it's going to be somewhere in that middle ground again, where my guess is you're going to have the corporate tax rate go from 21% to 25%, not 28% like they initially projected. I think you're going to have some increases on individual tax rates, but nowhere near what this administration put forward, and it's not going to be a $4 trillion package like they wanted. Could be closer to a trillion, depending on what the Republicans push forward today or tomorrow, and then where negotiations go from there.
Very good. Very good. Closing comments from anybody?
No, I like the measured approach. I mean, I like that people are, like, have a better attitude about things, but I would still be cautious about what's going on. And, you know, like, you know, as Ted was saying earlier, as far as the winter, I think you can look at what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere to get an idea of what the winter is going to be like. And even to the point of the mask, I mean, we saw at the beginning of this pandemic how Asian societies were dealing with this. They had already were putting the masks on because they have been dealing with pandemics in the past. I think that's going to condition us to change in some way. But I think we have some way to go on this pandemic. So I'd be optimistic, but still a little measured right now.
Yeah, cautiously optimistic. I agree with that.
Gentlemen, a great big thank you. Manny, good job. Stamati, thank you. It's a beautiful day. It's going to be a beautiful week. We're going to be in the 80s. Enjoy it, and we'll all regroup a week from today at 11 a.m. Thanks, guys. Yes, us.
Thank you, guys.
Calmar.
Yes, us.